your slides. No, we don't need to start recording. Let's say.
Okay. Welcome to everybody. My name is Ben Kern. We want to welcome you to the Flat Classroom Book Club. We're meeting today to discuss chapters 1 and 2. We're happy to have everybody with us. My fellow engaging educator and co-club moderator is here. His name's Neil Weatherby. You want to say hi, Neil? Well, Neil's here somewhere, but we want to get things going. We have an agenda for this afternoon. But first of all, we want to encourage everybody to check their audio settings, and that's in the tools menu. You go to audio, make sure your mic is working so that you can grab the mic and chime in. We encourage you to use the back channel down there in the chat. We'll have that going. And everything is being recorded so we can share that with our friends and everybody else who was unable to join us today. Our authors are here, Julie and Vicki, and we do have some guests joining us today. So far we have Susie Nestico from Pennsylvania, a Flat Classroom veteran who contributed to the book and who does amazing things. We're going to talk to her in a few minutes. We have a couple other guests who are scheduled to join in, so we'll be passing it to them as well. But most importantly, we want to make sure that everybody who's here feels encouraged to participate, chime in with your comments and questions. In my 11 years or so as an educator, it's not very often that you get to have something like this where you're talking one-on-one basically with the authors of a fantastic book, as well as people from all over the world to get their thoughts. So please contribute, please join in, and send some tweets out there too to get your PLN joining in with us today too. So I'm going to pass it over here to Julie or Vicki here to just say a quick hello, and then we're going to get rolling. So pass it over here.
Hi everybody, this is Vicki Davis from Camilla, Georgia, and we'll pass it to Julie in just a moment. Glad you're here. The dream of this book that Julie and I had when we sat down about 2 years ago now at the farm at a place called The Shed. Julie was staying out at the lodge out on the farm where the catfish ponds were and everything. And we walked out there under the trees and sat there in the dining room brainstorming. And we said, you know, we want this book to be an experience, not to be something just on paper. And what would it be like to flatten? So we really want to encourage you to innovate and be part of how do you flatten a book and how does the book evolve. And I've got my copy of the book open in front of me, and I'm actually taking notes. I hope when you have something to say, you'll say a page number, because I'm taking notes about what you're saying. I hope you'll share your Twitter hashtags and that sort of thing, because, you know, whatever we do, I can promise you Julie and I are going to keep writing on into the future as long as we have breath. You are now a part of it. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here, and we look forward to listening and learning from you. Julie?
Well, good morning from Beijing, China. I'm Julie Lindsay, and thanks to Neil and Ben for kicking off this book club and for being the host. It's just fantastic. Just to add to what Vicki was saying, the book for us has been not just a book, not just a textbook, but also a journey. And as most of you know, Flat Classroom is over 5 years old now. And after a couple of years, we knew that we had to write this book, and it was a long time coming, but it's certainly, the journey has been most interesting in terms of the things that we've done, and the people that we've included, and we're just so grateful to have so many wonderful educators who are contributing and out there doing such amazing things that we can be part of as well. So, Neil and Ben, thanks. Over to you again.
So much, Julie and Vicki, again, for inviting Neil and I to be a part of this, too. We've been involved in collaboration, global collaboration ourselves, and have just been really excited to read this book, and can't wait to hear what other people have to say. Speaking of hearing what other people have to say, we do have Susie Nestico here, who has become a friend of Neil and mine, but who also is a flat classroom veteran. And I wanted to have her say some things first. I know she's only got a few minutes. But my biggest question for you, Susie, was could you talk about what you've seen in students? You mentioned it in the book on page 2 that you see amazing things from students. But how do these global projects change them? How do they inspire them? Do any of them talk about these projects when you see them after graduation and things like that? Just share with us some of the details you've seen from students.
Hi, Ben. Hi, everyone. I'm Susie Nestico here from Northeast Pennsylvania. Glad to see the folks in the room tonight. Some of you I know. Ben, that's a loaded question, and I don't know that everyone has time for the answer. But insofar as really the amazing things that I see in my students, the biggest one that I would have to say is a developed sense of agency in their learning. And they do things now that I've never seen students do before. It's been a multi-year process. It didn't happen all at once. You know, the first time we participated in a flat classroom, obviously it was a different group of students than what I have now. But as it's evolved over the years, and students become involved, they learn more of what student-centered learning is about. And I'm able to allow them to take over for themselves. And I'm sure most people that I can see in the room are on Twitter, and you've all seen everything flailing throughout every social media outlet lately about the Comey T12 video project. That's one example of, I hadn't even seen it yet before a student contacted me, immediately started a Google Doc, immediately started tweeting it and saying, we want to do something and we want to help. And, you know, one of the other big concepts that Vicki and Julie talk a lot about, even in Chapter 1, is Friedman's notion of localization. And while this wasn't a local problem, they took a global made it local, and they got a GDoc out, a Google Doc out through Twitter, and are already within 1 week at the point of having 4 other schools with classrooms full of students involved and looking at what can we do toward this effort. And there was an opportunity. It was a teachable moment, and you know, through that, they're starting to learn, how social media works and the power of it. But they're also, you know, as teachers involved, we've been able to stop them and bring them back to look at opposing viewpoints. One of the other questions that you mentioned too was, what about, do I hear from students who are in college? And that is an emphatic all the time. And Vicki taught me this early on, but I have in Evernote, I have an at-a-girl file. And whenever a student tweets me, emails me, Facebooks me, or anything, and talks about what they did or what they're talking about in college,
I save it in that file and I have them all. But they often tweet me and talk to me about, you know, college professors being blown away. Number one, because they had an experience where they were communicating with other kids outside the classroom. Number two, I had one student message me once and say, hey, you're never going to be able to believe this, but our university just started implementing names in some of our classes, and the professor didn't know how it worked. So I was able to teach her, because that's what we used in flat classroom. I could go on, but I'm going to go ahead and hand it over and let Ben take back over to move on to the next person.
If anybody has a question for Susie, I'm sure she'll give you a good shot answering it. If you want to chime in talking, up in the top left corner of your screen is a talk button that you can click on. No questions? You can also raise your hand by clicking on the hand just beneath that as well. If you have any questions that come to mind, feel free to ask her in a moment. We'll move on to sort of the more open discussion here, and we want to start by asking sort of why use global collaboration in your classroom. Any thoughts on that from anybody?
For the why, we're thinking maybe some takeaways from the book. What stuck out to you in terms of reasons behind going global and collaborating, but definitely chime in with your thoughts on this one. And again, raise your hand if you want to chime in, or just grab a mic. Now's a great time to do that.
Well, this is Nikki, and I just got to interject one thing. You know, I hear the words all the time, cute and nice and sweet, about global collaboration, and I just think people don't get how it has to be part of the classroom. So I hope you guys will raise your hand. It's time to get talking. There are no right answers here, no wrong answers. Just share your thoughts, what you're doing. We need to see this back channel chat going. Kyle Dunbar, applause to you. Look at that. Somebody else.
I mean, he was probably, I could share with you, when we put out some proof chapters of that book and invited people to send in comments, and you'll see on the back cover we've got a comment from Tom Friedman and one from Michael Surdick and other comments inside. And David Wallach has a comment inside the first page, which is excellent, but David also sent us another comment which didn't make it to print. I'm not quite sure why now. But his other comment was, you're sitting in an interview for a new teaching position and the principal asks, how many teachers have you collaborated with? Who teach in a city, in a desert, in a jungle, in a shanty town? In other words, how flat is your classroom going to be? So I think that's food for thought as we look at, you know, our own professional development, our own sort of integration of global education curriculum, global collaborative curriculum, and think, you know, it will come to that one day where when you're going for a new job, the person interviewing you is going to say, how flat is your classroom? How flat has it been? How flat is it going to be? So I'd just like to, maybe that's a conversation starter for this meeting as well. Thanks, Ben.
My concern, too, is that we may be a long way from that happening, especially where we are, like in a large city, large American city like Detroit. There's not a lot going on in our area in terms of connections. There's spots here and there. But I would imagine that there's a lot of places in America where this idea of flattening classrooms is completely foreign to them.
I think there's several people who want to hear from Honor. Anything to add, Honor? Don't be shy here.
So I guess I'll just expand on what I was saying in the chat, because I came to this project a few years ago when I was teaching a class where I really wanted students to develop their global competence, and I realized the key piece that was missing was giving them the actual experience of being a global citizen and working together with their peers around the world. And I guess kind of as a riff off of something that Chris Lehman is known for saying, that we don't need school to just prepare us for the real world, but we need to do real work as part of our education. So, you know, for me, that translated to the global dimension, where I didn't just want to prepare my students for a globally connected future. They were already experiencing it to a limited degree socially, and I wanted them to understand that all aspects of their life were global, and including as students, I wanted them to experience global participation and citizenship and collaboration, and to do that starting in high school or younger. I taught high school at the time. So now, you know, I think it's great that I do see it trickling down to even younger students, and I hope that the push comes in both directions. So in addition to maybe a principal asking you in an interview how globally connected you are, I think also as younger students come up through the grades, they will start to expect the teacher to be doing things in globally connected ways. So if they've had experiences reading aloud with students in other places around the world, then, you know, I hope they will start advocating for that. And so we will have a movement that will grow faster.
I think one thing that really sticks with me is the sort of the authentic aspect of it. And teaching and learning is so much more effective when what's being done is authentic. And using global collaboration just provides a real sense of authenticity to whatever you're doing. It's not something being done for the teacher or being done to pass the class. But there's a purpose beyond just, you know, the grade, which is more motivating and I think more engaging, and that will produce better results.
Thanks for sharing, Honor. It's great to have, it looks like we have a mix of teachers like Susie Nestico and Honor who have done collaborative projects before, and from the chat it looks like we're getting some folks who are new to this, and that sort of sends us into this next topic here of the challenges of global collaboration. And from what I'm seeing there in the chat, it looks like that maybe one of the challenges folks are facing is the how to get started or how to pitch it. And Julie said something interesting, I think it went by here, that sometimes you just have to do it first and, you know, apologize for it later. And that's sort of the way it has to be. Is there anybody who has questions that they'd like to share about how to get started? We have some experts here and experienced people. What questions do you have about some of these challenges, and how can we help you through this book club move forward in these efforts? And be sure to raise your hand and chime in. And maybe while we are waiting for some folks to ask their questions and use the little raise hand button there on the left-hand side. We could have Julie or Vicki talk about the whole getting started. I'm going to hand to Neil, and then maybe Julie or Vicki, you could talk about what advice maybe you have for some of these new to the game folks.
I think for me, along with what Ben said, it's the question for me is how do you get administrators who don't buy into this to buy into it quickly enough that you can still beg for forgiveness and not make anybody too angry, even though it should make them angry to begin with, but it does perhaps.
You know, I mean, the thing for me, Julie and I both had different circumstances, but you can't wait for ideal circumstances. The I is in the middle of attitude. Okay, so I can't control everything. I can't control others, but I can control myself. I can control my attitude. And you're going to see in chapter 3, chapter 3 is one of those really meaty chapters that has a lot of stuff. But chapter 3 is actually step 1 of the process of flattening your classroom, which is to connect. And each of those sections, you connect yourself, you connect your school, you connect your students in that order. And the second step is you have to connect your students. I mean, I don't believe in this clandestine, you know, hidden side of Web 2.0 that we have to do. I mean, I just went to the curriculum director. I said, I don't really know a lot about wikis. And I met Julie Lindsay online for the first time yesterday, but she did some work with the K-12 online conference, and we would like to merge our classrooms for 6 weeks. And here's the plan, and here's how it fits in with best practices and research-based best practices. So what we've tried to give you is here are the research-based best practices that we know of, and we have it all the way through here, but a lot in Chapter 1, so that you have a leg to stand on. You can say, you know, this is the cooperative learning that we're doing. And here are some trends you can see on page 7. We have quite a few footnotes. And that's why, you know, you may seek getting buy-in by flipping to page 322, which is your endnotes. And you can see the first chapter in particular has some of the most endnotes. It has 33 endnotes because you can go through and say, okay, this is why. This is what we need to do. But remember, you have only one life to live, and if you wait for somebody to tell you to do it, you're not going to be as happy as if you decide, I'm going to take initiative and improve the classroom for my kids. I just got a letter this week. It goes in my Attagirl file, Susie. I love that you mentioned that. And the student said, Ms. Vicki, he was part of the very first black classroom, and Julie's going to remember this young man because he made fun of me the whole time. He made fun of Twitter. He thought it was dumb, and now he's writing me a letter and says, Ms. Vicki, I'm in an emerging media class. They're talking about wikis, Twitter, blogs, and you taught me in 10th grade. He says, I hope the students appreciate more than I did. He said, I didn't take it seriously. I did learn a lot. I didn't appreciate it, and for that I apologize. And that's what you're here for. You're for the kids to thank you in 5 years and 6 and 7 years after they get out. Not necessarily today, but if you have excellence and you work hard, you're going to have that thank you. So it starts with you and connecting yourself, and you're doing it right now. This is your step 1.
Donna in Geneva, and I've done a week in the life. Last year I started, and I'm a certified teacher. So when I first started, I had no idea what I was doing, and I had one principal that would back me up on it, kind of. So we went through the whole thing, and when we finished, I had the parents all invited, and I did invite the administration and our tech people, our district head people, to come and watch when the kids all showed what they did and showcased their work using the wiki, using the tools. And that's really how I got a lot of buy-in, when people could actually see it. It was so abstract before, but when they can see what the kids learned and hear from them what they did. It was an amazing thing. And it's been a little rocky, but certainly a lot easier since then, and I'm really grateful for that experience.
Julie here. I'd just like to welcome Wayne Debnar to the room. Wayne is actually our elementary school principal at the school I'm at the moment, Beijing Gifts International School. Do you remember Wayne when you came out to Beijing last year? And I'd just like to say that at our school, well, this is my third year in the school, and you know, we've been looking at integrating global collaborative projects across the school, and it really takes, you know, a classroom teacher to be willing and ready to take on something like this. And it can't be top down, it needs to be more bottom up with sort of middle supported, so to speak. And right at the moment we've got a grade 4 teacher who's new to the school, but she's absolutely wonderful, and she's now taken on the A Week in the Life project, having an absolute ball with it. Her kids are just reveling in the connections that they're making, and you know, this is just the start of the project, but they're going to go through that project and really make an impact. So, you know, I'm hoping that that will actually model what global collaborative learning looks like for the rest of the elementary school at this, and then we'll see where we can take it from there. But you know, it does take, as I say, you've got to work with the willing, and this does not always work as a top-down approach, and that's something for administrators to think about and find within their schools who is willing, but you know, support those who are willing. Over to you.
What we've found in our schools too is the grassroots approach working, and that, you know, when we've had a couple teachers trying new things, whether it is collaboration, global collaborative projects, or anything new and tech related, that we're able to get interest in that, and it grows and almost becomes part of the school culture. What we're just hoping happens is that more and more of that takes off, that then we've got the admin joining in too, so you've kind of got the bottom, the bottom and the grassroots working, and then the top down working and sort of meeting in the middle. And I think the other thing that I'm hoping that a book like this is able to accomplish, and maybe Julie or Vicky could talk about what they've heard in this regard, but I'm also hoping that this is a book that pre-student teachers start reading in college courses and colleges and then all around the world, because I think that they are a group of people that need to be talked to learn about this sort of thing too, because we're seeing a lot of new teachers come in who are not familiar with this sort of approach. So then the other thing that comes to mind too is that you know, joining in on some of these projects leads to teachers, you know, sort of going outside and starting their own projects and connecting through others, other networks like Classroom 2.0 and things like that. So that's one of the things I've appreciated most seeing is the teachers who start these projects and then it expands, sort of like Susie Nepstico was talking about earlier when she was talking about now she's got students, you know, sort of taking the lead on the CONI topic and spreading that around and doing some work on that almost completely independent and almost outside of school. It really takes off. Just this question of making it fit in the curriculum is an important one, and I'd love to hear somebody talk to that point for a minute, because it did come up in the chat that there are big worries about making it fit in the curriculum. And I think Neil and I are believers that if you work backward and start with what you want to accomplish and get that laid out, and then figure out how you can, you know, integrate your tech tools or your global collaboration, I think you can be successful with it in just about any way. So we'd love to hear some people talk about how they're worried about making it fit in the curriculum, because I'd argue that there are very few spots in any curriculum where you couldn't make it work. There's just so much to these projects. So who can talk about that, making it fit?
Okay, I don't want to monopolize the microphone. And just to let you know, I'm going to have to go before the hour as well. I'll probably just disappear in about 15 minutes. Making it fit, when I first went to Qatar, I had a class, and the unit I was meant to be teaching was creating a video using whatever the software was we were using in Qatar at the time. So I turned that on its head and introduced the flat classroom project to the students. So yes, essentially the outcome was a piece of multimedia. Yes, it was a video, but the unit just completely transformed into this rich content, this rich global collaboration. And of course we looked at design, we designed our video, we used the storyboard, etc. So it's really, you really think out of the box. So if you've got a unit that says, oh, we need to look at the geography of Asia, for example, well, you know, a global collaborative project where you're connecting with students from Asia or other parts of the world could be part of what you essentially need to cover. So think out of the box is my advice. Over to you.
It's true. It's like a shifting of your mindset in a way that we want folks to, you know, take on. And one of the things too was, you know, just somebody mentioned in the chat that you should start small. And I think that's one of the things that I learned from Vicki and Julie is that the idea of collaboration, in the book, is, I think you guys refer to it as collaboration 1.0, the idea that sometimes it's just working with another teacher next door and learning how to collaborate and then taking it to the next level, slowly but surely, so that you've got it all down. I think that's one of the best takeaways in terms of tips from the book. Neil, did you have anything to add on that point?
The only tip that I have that I think might have been in Vicki's book also, Julie's book, was that don't try to start from scratch. You know, there's so many programs and projects are already implemented that join those first. And I don't know from your experience that you found schools to partner with through these projects and continued working with them beyond the end of the original project. So don't try to find schools on your own to begin with, to join, you know, a flat classroom project and then go from there.
One of the things that we're seeing too is that I would guess a lot of the people who are getting involved in the flat classroom projects, and now they're running K through 12 in various incarnations, and I think that's great. And at some point, I'd love to hear how the K through 2 project is going. And we do have David Truss here, who hopefully will be gracious enough to answer a question in a moment. But anyway, we have the people who are going with these projects and starting their own or looking for ways to do them in a different way, or really individualize it to meet their taste, and a lot of projects grow out of that.
I just wanted to mention that we put in the back channel a project called When Missoula Was Young, and they're actually working with their local historical societies and linking up, studying the different people that are in the cemetery and researching and producing a website. It's a very powerful example, and they're using it to replace their local history unit. They used to have a project, a scrapbook they would do, and this is what they're doing instead. So you can, you know, sometimes it's not as much fitting the, how am I going to fit it into the curriculum? It's how is the curriculum going to be taught in a more engaging, powerful way that really deepens learning. Because if the kids are doing a poster together, how can you be sure that they're all contributing? But if they're doing a wiki or a Google Doc or anything else, and you can see those logins, then that's a little bit different.
Trust makes an interesting point here when he contributes to the book on page 6. And I haven't met David before, but it's funny. I just tweeted a great blog post of his the other day. But David, we're very happy to have you. But on page 6, he quotes or paraphrases Dylan Thomas, go quietly into the light, engage, be brave. And I think for a principal here, and we can sort of get the other angle, hopefully if you can join in, David, that I'm curious what it means to be brave. What does a brave teacher look like?
I don't know if people can hear me. Wonderful. I'm just coming off the long drive. Forgive me if I'm a little scattered as I try to join in on the conversation late. Sorry I couldn't make it on time. Well, I think that the being brave, when I wrote that, it actually stems from A Brave New Worldwide Web, which is a video that I created. And when I created that, I created it as a teacher, not as a principal or vice principal. So for me, what it meant was the idea of the teacher being the lead learner and not being afraid to be in the front of the room and to make mistakes and to try things for the first time. And I think that's where the bravery comes. I think for a long time there was the illusion that the teacher had to be the smartest person in the room. And the quote that I love now is, the smartest person in the room is the room. And I think when you look at the world being flat and the classroom being flat, that room gets extremely large. So you have a lot of wisdom to pull from. But the being brave part is mostly about understanding how messy learning is and rolling up your sleeves and getting in there and just trying something new. That's about it for now.
So much, David, and it's a pleasure to meet you and have you in here. And I think that the more teachers we have, we've talked about this earlier before you got here, the more teachers we have working in the grassroots, planting the seeds of global collaboration, the better, and that's a great way to grow the movement. But also, I'm of the opinion that there does need to be some admin buy-in and some culture, school culture things happening from the top down in order for these to really catch on. And I don't know if we have any other admins in here, administrators, but we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And I know there are some different experiences that we've had. Also might want to ask Donna, maybe put Donna on the spot again. You mentioned you brought your administrators into the room to discuss, or when you showed your project, and I was curious if that changed their viewpoint or how that went.
It actually totally changed their viewpoint because the room was filled with parents who loved the project, and once they saw it, they also loved it. And their biggest fears were the tech issues. We have a very conservative district, and they were concerned about protection and proper training and that sort of thing. And so I included that in the presentation, and since then I have, you know, really had support when I asked for things to be unblocked. You know, not 100% support, but it's little by little, and I've learned to be patient with it. But this is the second year, and it's much easier going. And I really would suggest that it's a big concept, and it seems daunting until they can see it in action.
Things become, you know, all you have to do is see it once or see some of the results once, and you're a believer from that point, especially as an administrator, I would have to imagine. We do have some new folks coming in, some now's a good time to remind you to check your audio up there in the tools menu. Make sure your audio is working. And we're getting, you know, a little past halfway, closing in on 20 minutes, and we'd love to empower everybody to join in and contribute. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear your questions. We want to know what your thoughts were, either on anything in chapters 1 and 2 or anything global collaboration related. Feel free to raise your hand, and we will make sure that the mic gets to you right away, or if it's open, just take it.
I just wanted to say something, and this is just real important. It's on page 21, and it's about correlation versus causation, and I know that a lot of people talk about this, but we've got some great minds in the room, and I just want to throw this out there. We know that the Hawthorne effect showed us that it comes from the Hawthorne factory. When they turned up the lights, productivity went up. And then they turned down the lights, and productivity went up. And then they changed everything, and every time they changed something, the productivity went up. And they found that the process of being studied actually improved productivity. The other thing is that we have highly engaged teachers who are doing global collaboration, and global collaboration itself is exciting if you really get into it and you do it right. So the concern is, how do we get to best practices when we're dealing with something that so tends to improve the mood of most teachers who jump in and do it and make it through the first project? You know, that's kind of my struggle, and I kind of hope, you know, this chapter, we didn't have a ton of answers in the research chapter, which is chapter 2, except that every global collaborative project that we have to start involving researchers. But, you know, that's just a question I always have when we study new technology. When you have something new, aren't you going to have an engaged teacher, and then does that have an effect on what we find in the best practices? So that's just kind of a question I have for the room.
Just for the room, we'd love to hear from Cindy, too, who just joined us and who's been a topic of discussion. Maybe her ears were burning there. But we've been talking about your local history project. And if you would love to, we'd love to hear from you about the power of global collaboration and the success that is that project, if you're able to talk to that point. And Cindy might not be able to answer that question right now. So I want to make sure we open it up here to Q&A. And if you have any other questions, either about chapter one or two, or for our authors, we would love to hear. We've also got some amazing educators here in the room who we could probably get into a really great discussion with on any question. So grab the mic and let us know what you have, what's on your mind here.
This is Honor again, and I'll just try to respond briefly to what Vicki was asking about. I'm not sure if this is addressing your question exactly, but Susie had mentioned earlier, she and I were talking when we were together face-to-face recently about how, oddly enough, our very first experience with one of the projects that we ever did was our favorite, and mainly because it was so new and it was so unknown, and we were having to learn right alongside the students and often didn't even know how to respond to some of their questions because we were waiting for the next teacher meeting to find out how everything was going to work. And so I think that is interesting when, you know, the people who are risk takers jump in early on. That is an exciting process for them. On the other hand, maybe other people are not as comfortable, you know, doing lots of new things that they've never tried before all at once. And for me, the way I'm trying to keep it fresh now that I'm doing Net Gen Ed for I think the third or fourth time, you know, I've decided that I'm going to co-teach it with colleagues. And of course, I know everybody might not have the flexibility to pair up like that, but basically just the idea of mentoring someone else that you know through some other relationship. In my case, it's a school where I work 2 days a week, so I'm pairing with another teacher and we're teaching the project together, and so that keeps it fresh for me because I'm teaching her and thinking about things through her eyes, and then it's a safer way for her to jump in and do it all for the first time. So I guess that's another research topic in and of itself, but I definitely think we want to try to be mindful of how we can continue to scale these projects, because I think everybody should ultimately have the opportunity to do something like this, and it has to do with us taking it and spreading it in a variety of different ways.
Very well said, Honor. Thank you so much. And I really love the idea of co-teaching around projects like this, sort of, you know, collaborating around a collaborative project. I think that is very well put. We've also got a question in the chat here that I wanted to throw out to everybody, because I think this is a big deal. And I'm just scrolling out to see where it came. And it was, what suggestions do you have to connect with other teachers globally? Let me throw that out there to see what folks have to say. My first answer is Twitter, but let's see what everybody else has to say. And I also get a lot of votes for Twitter, and there are some great folks to follow there too. I think the teacher networks that are out there. Steve was mentioned in the first chapter, but Classroom 2.0, any Classroom 2.0 members here, I think that's a great one to be a part of and a great way to connect with people through their groups and posting, you know, ideas there. There also is the Global Education Collaborative run by Lucy Gray, and they have a great conference in November. I think that's globaleducation.ning.com. And Skype has started one too, Skype in the Classroom, that a lot of people have had success with. I think it's education.skype.com, I think. But those seem to be big three. There's lots of others. If I can find a blog post I did a little while back that has some others, but there's some great things. Topic of hashtags has come up. There's the Global Ed hashtag. It's a good one to follow in Flat Class also. And getting involved in Twitter chats is excellent too, because they have chats for all different grades and subject levels, and that's a great way to not only build your PLN, your personal learning network, but also to connect with others. Anybody else had success? Other things I'm missing? What am I missing here? Please contribute.
One of the simplest things, I think, is when you are doing a project, is making sure that you're talking directly with that teacher as much as you can. Early on, I was in some collaborative projects, but we were just sending information back and forth or pictures back and forth, but we really didn't take the time to really get to know each other. And if we can Skype with each other and see each other's faces and actually create a connection, which Flat Classroom is excellent at, because we have so many teacher meetings. But without that, you really can't make that connection.
It's Julie here again. A good point from Susie there. How do you go beyond just making that initial connection and crossing the book? We call that going beyond the way. I was trying to find the page, but it's not going beyond the way. It's page 9. Going beyond the wow. And of course it is wow to have a Skype connection, to have a real-time connection, to have that first sort of response to a blog post, to find that you're handshaking with someone on the other side of the world. But then going beyond that is where you need to keep the engagement and the collaboration and the actual work ongoing. And just to Neil and Ben, thank you so much. I'm just going to have to cut out. I've got to get in the car and get to work. But thank you so much, and thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you so much, Julie, for joining us. And I was hoping that maybe Susie could talk about how she's done it and how she's moved beyond that and how that progressed as somebody who's done that, or maybe somebody else who's run a project, how they've moved to true collaboration.
Ben, I don't know. Hi, everyone. It's Susie. I don't know if you can go ahead and put in the chat. I think it, how have I moved beyond it? Do you mean, what exactly is the it? I just want to make sure that I'm clear. If you could type that in chat, maybe. Okay, I'm not seeing anything. I'm just going to assume it has to do with cooperation and collaboration. Okay, connection and collaboration. I think that this is one of the biggest things that we all need to appreciate and understand. And for whatever reason, lately in the Twitter sphere and blogosphere, I've seen a lot of posts about this lately. I think Jackie Kirkstein was in here and she left. She just wrote a post, and I wrote about it not long ago, is that I think often as teachers, we get those three C's all mixed up, the connection, cooperation, and the collaboration. And I think that the collaboration part, you know, there's a lot of slack that goes on online about, oh, how do you know who to trust? You can't develop relationships with people online because the online world isn't as real. And I think that none of that is true. And what I've experienced and how I've moved beyond, I think this is the key, is that, you know, when we connect, those are the cutesy things that Vicki described early on. You know, we meet on Skype, our classes talk to each other, we exchange pictures, and that's it. When we cooperate, we assign, you know, roles, and the goal is not as lofty or not as large. When we collaborate, that's the meat of what this is all about, and getting down in the trenches, working side by side with your students. And it's only through collaboration that trust is really developed in online online environments. I don't know if anyone else in the room is involved with another connected network, PLP network. But my school has done a year one cohort of that just this year. And one of the things we talked about in there as well was, you know, there are different levels of trust online. You know, you wouldn't just give your house keys to somebody because you talk to them all the time on Twitter. But, you know, you get to a point where you're collaborating and you're doing all the hard work, and it's tough. And sometimes you don't sleep so much, and it's really hard to keep going. But when you get to that point and you your students can realize and appreciate the benefits of it in the back end, you develop relationships way beyond what you could ever imagine would occur online. Like, I would easily give my house keys to Vicki or Julie if they needed them. And it's not because they wrote this book. It's because I've had to go through some of the blood, sweat, and tears of what it takes to get there. So there's a big difference, and everyone needs to appreciate that, than the QC connection and the hard work of collaboration.
Susie, that articulates it nearly perfectly, and I think that's the biggest challenge for classroom teachers, is getting beyond that cute stuff, you know, the pen pal type thing. I mean, that has its place, and it's fun and it's great. But when you can truly have students collaborating, and that's why I like the idea that we've got the flat classroom projects running K through 12 now, ingraining the youngsters, the K through 5 kids, with the concept of collaboration and seeing where they take it. We are running out of time here, and so we wanted to encourage you to follow some of our special guests here on Twitter, and we wanted to thank, of course, David Truss and Susie Nestico for joining in, and all of the amazing educators who are with us here today. We really appreciate you chiming in. The Flat Class hashtag on Twitter is always lively, but I anticipate it's even more so during the book club. There was mention earlier about the book being sold out, so if you're here and want the book, maybe Vicki can talk about that in a moment, but I think we're running out, but you can't get it on the Kindle. The next discussion is about chapter 3, which is an amazing chapter that really lays the groundwork for connecting and collaborating with other teachers. And that's going to be Monday, March 19th at 6 a.m. Eastern. We hope to have you there, and if that's too early for you here in the U.S., then we'll record it for you so you can see, and we look forward to having a global audience for that. Neil or Julie or Vicky, is there, Julie left, but Neil or Vicky, is there any closing thoughts you had?
You know, we'll feel like the book has succeeded when we start seeing the projects born, and hoping that, I know in the future the plan is to split into some small groups and to kind of come back together as we talk. The goal is to, you know, to have a conversation. We have many of the thought leaders, and it's just so, I can't tell you what it means to see the people who I know and admire that have come in this room, and then a lot of new people that really have hearts who love students and want to do what's right. It just really means a lot. And, you know, it's kind of funny. We have 23 right now, and that's the number. We actually started our first book watching with 24, and when Julie was in here, we had 24. It was 24 students and 2 teachers, and that's all it started with. And, you know, it's time to take it to the next level. And it's not about just the flat classroom projects. It's about all collaborative projects, becoming projects where we co-create and we work together. And to do that, we have to develop a community of practice. And we need a pedagogy. We need people to know that you can do this. You know, the very first project that I did with Julie, the second week I was called into the office because somebody had said, they're going to come through the computer and bomb us from Bangladesh. They were scared to death that something was going to happen, and that somehow this technology was just going to get the kids. But it was transformational. It was powerful. It was life-changing, and we need that for so many students, and I'm just very grateful and thankful for that. I also want to mention that we are doing a new e-book that's supposed to be smaller. You can use the Kindle book, of course, but it seems to take a little bit of time to download, and they're also doing a reprint of the book. So any mistakes you find, let me know, because that reprint's going to happen here pretty soon, which is exciting. But I am personally following all of the public highlights on Kindle. So the easiest way to make your highlights go public if you're reading on Kindle is to tweet it or Facebook it, and then it'll ask you, do you want to let this go public, and then we can start seeing it. If not, go to kindle.amazon.com. You can log in with your Amazon account, and you can follow me or Susie or any of the others, and you can see the public links. And there's really a very robust environment in the back end of Kindle that a lot of people don't know is there. And for me, I'm kind of looking at what's going on the back end and what you're saying, because our goal, if we're fortunate enough to get to redo the book, is, if you could see my notes from today, I'm sitting here writing in Twitter handles and hashtags, and I have the smartest person in the room is the room at the top of page 7 now that David Truss said earlier. And Donna Roman said, I had one principal that would back me up in sort of a kind of way, and Donna Roman. And I just have all this written all over, because you are the book. This is an experience, and it's a movement, and I'm just very excited. I do want to say, Paula, that we talk about mixing high school, middle school, and college level collaboration in the design. So we'll get into the connection. I think in great detail it goes into the connection connection planning tool in chapter 2, and you'll see how college needs to connect with high school, needs to connect with elementary, and vice versa. So Anyway, thank you all for being here, and please innovate, and thank you to Neil and Ben. You're just amazing. I knew last year, Ben and Neil, I couudn't go to ISTE because my daughter had hurt her back, and it was pretty traumatic, and Julie and Susie and Ben and Neil stepped in, and Ben and Neil were so helpful. They never even met me. And I saw what they were doing in the back channel, and I heard they had done book clubs before, and I was like, you know what, this book club is about everybody having a conversation, and it's got to get past Julie and Vicki and just the flat classroom teachers. It's got to spread to every project, excellence in every project in every classroom around the world, and that is our passion. If we can improve one classroom and one child and inspire one teacher, then we've done something and we've left a legacy. So it's a very exciting time to teach and an exciting time to live, and I'm glad to be part of it. So back over to you, Ben and Neil, and thank you for the wonderful job that you're doing.
Thank you, Vicki. It's been an honor for us to work with you. And we appreciate this opportunity very much. If you haven't figured out or haven't checked the emails, we're doing this every other week, depending on the side of the world you are. So next one is 6 a.m. next Monday. It's for the other side of the world, more convenient. And then in 2 weeks, we'll be back this time for people in the Western Hemisphere. And as Vicki was saying, and Ben said earlier, this is about all of us, and we'd love to have you participate throughout the week. And if you have any thoughts while you're reading chapter 3 or chapter 4, feel free to send Vicki or Julie or Ben and me tweet and give us some ideas to where we should head with the next conversation. I heard there are a couple hands up, so any hands? If not, I'll be signing off. Thanks, everybody.